As mentioned earlier, I'll be reading from Psalms chapter 1. Psalms chapter 1. Blessed is the man who walks not in the counsel of the wicked, nor stands in the way of sinners, nor sits in the seat of scoffers, but his delight is in the law of the Lord, and on his law he meditates day and night. He is like a tree planted by streams of water that yields its fruit in its season, and its leaf does not wither. In all that he does, he prospers. The wicked are not so, but are like chaff that the wind drives away. Therefore the wicked will not stand in the judgment, nor sinners in the congregation of the righteous. For the Lord knows the way of the righteous, but the way of the wicked will perish.
Thankful very much for the reading. Thankful for the prayer Jerry offered. Thankful for the prayers that have been offered already this morning. I hope that you know that the book of Psalm is one of these books that has a fourfold benefit. Number one, it becomes our great comfort book. You go to it and you think, okay, let's read Psalm 23. Let's read Psalm 19. Maybe I should have changed my lesson and started about Psalm 19 versus Psalm 1. It's our strength book. It is our help Bible book. And also is the adorning of God in his glory. All these things are found in the book of Psalm that I think is so significant and so interesting. And I would say that probably one of the challenges I want to give myself this week, and I would say the same to you, is pick out the chapter in the book of Psalm that renders one of those four things that you see is going to be more beneficial to you probably this week than maybe any other. It may be a help, it may be a comfort, maybe a source of strength, and maybe you just want to give all glory and adoration to God because of all the many things that he's done. And there's so many of these chapters in the book of Psalm that render these things. It's not just one, there's several of them. And you probably can look at the heading of the chapter and probably get an understanding about what it is that he's going to say about either God or your help or your comfort or your strength, whatever it may be that you need. So please know that that was going to be vital to you. So getting into this, it makes me understand something very clear of what he states here, that in the beginning of verse 2, we'll talk a little bit more about this, but he says, his delight is in the law of Jehovah. His delight is in the law of Jehovah. That just kind of sets the tone of saying, okay, here's what you need to do with the book of Psalm. Read it. It's almost like he's saying, go into this book and see how that by the time you read all the chapters, all the verses, you begin to delight in the law of Jehovah. That's one of the most interesting things that you'll see in the book of Psalm, chapter 119, the delight in the law of Jehovah. But then what you see as you begin to, it introduces so many wonderful things that really you could see in just about every book of the Bible, that there's a distinction between two things. And the first one I want you to pay attention to is the choices that are made here. Very similar to what you've got in Matthew chapter 7, verse 13, 14. You could choose the way. It's either the narrow way that leads to life, or it's the broad way that leads to destruction. Many will go into the broad way, and only a few will go into the narrow way. There's two choices that you've got. That's very similar to what you've got in the case in Deuteronomy that's stated in chapter 30, of which God is giving his instruction to his people through Moses. And here's what God states in the choices that they've got. In chapter 30, verse 19, I call heaven and earth to witness against you this day that I have set before you life and death, the blessing and the curse. Therefore, choose you the life that you may live, thou and thy seed, to love Jehovah thy God, to obey his voice, to cleave to him, for he is thy life and the length of thy days, that thou mayest dwell in the land which Jehovah sware unto thy fathers, to Abraham, to Isaac, to Jacob, to give to you. He gives you a very clear understanding of that chapter, which one you ought to choose. Now, he doesn't force it on them. He doesn't push them into it. He says, this is what life brings to you if you choose to delight in the law of Jehovah. If you follow this way, this is a choice that's going to be very beneficial to you. It will bring blessing to you when you go into this new land. Yet, when you look at what's stated here, one of the most interesting things that is found in this chapter in the book of Psalm 1 is that a blessing, a happy man, is one in which he gives you the first choice that you make is a negative one. And the negative one is, blessed is the man, and the negative part is, that does not walk in the counsel of the wicked. It would have been, you think maybe you ought to start it with verse 2 and bring verse 2 up to verse 1 and then bring verse 1 down to verse 2. Let's talk about the light of the law of the Lord. He says the first choice that you've got is this one. It's a negative one. What you should not do. And I'd say that's probably, as a parent, that's probably what we say to our children. The first choice that we say to them is no. That's what you should do first. Say no. And that's the choice that we make for them. When we say, when they do something that we don't want them to do, we say no. So it's kind of a negative choice that we either tell the child or we say that's what the child should respond and say no. But he gives you an understanding of why you say this. These, which he says in verse 1, that are wicked, those that are sinners, those that are scoffers, he says these are the people that are defying God. They're defying God. They're rejecting what God has to say. They have no delight in this law. You got to go opposite of verse 2. They have no delight in the law of Jehovah. And their way, where they stand, what they do, is something you should avoid. So therefore, this first choice is, don't go their way. Now in this, I don't know if I've got this in this one. Yes. Yes, here it is. Who is the counsel that you listen to? Who is the one that you get most of your information, guidance, advice, help, gives you the direction that you need? What counsel do you get? Who are they? Who are those people? Now, are they godly? Is that the source of this information? Are they spiritual? Are they based upon everything that's approved by Scripture? In other words, they're going to give you the influence that you need to have to make the proper choices in other endeavors of life. Is this what you choose? One of the most interesting things that I saw in this text here in verse 1 is it's kind of like a progression where he says in verse 1, blesses the man that walks, stands, and sits. Walk, stand, sit. How many times has it been that you were walking along, wherever it were, be a path or road or whatever, you're walking along, all of a sudden you saw something. And when you saw it, you just kept looking, and to the point that what you did was, when you saw it, that you stopped. In some cases, if there was a bench or a tree or a limb or something, that you could just sit down and see it. Walk, stand, and sit. I don't know if that's really the progression of what he's really wanting you to get to see and understand, but it sounds a whole lot like Deuteronomy chapter 6, verse 7. When God was giving the instruction to the people of Israel that you should find yourself delighting in the law, meditating on the testimonies, listening to the statutes, do you know the way he progressively talked about how that they should observe this law? Here's the way he said it. He said, when you walk in the way, when you lie down, and when you rise up. When you walk in the way, when you lie down, when you rise up, it's kind of like a progression. But really, it's not necessarily a progression as much as it entails everything about what you do. When you walk and you stand, you sit, it's encompassing everything about your life. Therefore, whoever you're getting the counsel from, you're going to probably walk that way, stand that way, and sit in that way. If it were to be the thing that God was telling the people of Israel through Moses, in Deuteronomy chapter 6, it was, okay, when you walk in the way, when you lay down, when you rise up, this is what you should meditate on. This is what you should think about. And that's the same thing that he talks about a little bit later on in verse 2 of this chapter. But then there's also something to be said for this. In verse 1, there's almost a digression of saying wicked, sinners, and scoffers. Wicked, sinners, and scoffers. Wicked people. Definitely they're sinners. What do sinners do? Sinners would be scoffers. They're going to be the ones who will participate in a evil, And then they would be considered a sinner. And then they would also be considered people who would continually reject and scoff at everything that pertains to the light of the law of the Lord. So the choice is, you're going to be a wicked, be a part of the sinners, part of the scoffers. Will you walk, will you stand, and will you sit with them? We know from 1 Corinthians chapter 15, verse 33, if we find ourselves companying with and having companionship with those that are sinners, he talks about evil companionships that corrupt your morals. If you're going to walk with them, stand with them, and sit with them, you're going to turn out to listen to their counsel, in all probability, and you're going to be just like them. You're going to be considered the next group of wicked sinners and scoffers. So there's a digression here that goes on of what he talks about here, that he says, stay away from this. Don't touch it. Don't listen to their counsel. Don't pay attention to their counsel, way, and seat that he talks about in the same verse. So we got three different sections here that pertains to those people that would be blessed if they avoid this group of people. And we've been told that. We've been told that so many different times to not seek this counsel. But then we find ourselves, the other choice is, the alternative is the light and the law of Jehovah. In the book of Psalm, chapter 119, he mentions this in a few different verses. Verse 16, for example. I will delight myself in thy statutes. As a result, here's what I thought, this is so amazing. When you delight yourself in his statutes, you will not forget what he says. Now, everyday language that people speak, if we adore what they say, we'll repeat it quickly. I mean, we'd have no problem in delighting in certain people's words that we won't forget what they say. Oh, I heard this person say this, and this is what they told me. So we delight in what they say, and we repeat it. Chapter 119, verse 20, my soul breaks for the longing that it has thine own ordinances at all times. My soul breaks for the longing. I long and I delight in this. Even the same chapter, verse 47, said that this way, and I will delight myself in thy commandments, which I have loved. Same chapter, you will notice in chapter 119, verse 70, their heart is as fat as grease, but I delight in the law. Verse 77, let thy tender mercies come unto me that I may live, for thy law is my delight. Same chapter, the two verses before the end, verse 174. I have longed for thy salvation, O Jehovah, and thy law is my delight. I delight in everything you want me to do, everything you say that your law teaches, I delight in that. To the point that it becomes his daily meditation. Once he reads it, he not only delights in it because of the information that he's gaining, but he meditates on this counsel that he's gaining from the Lord. Psalm 119, verse 97, oh, how love I thy law, it is my meditation all the day. My meditation. The word meditate in the Hebrew language in this text is a word that means mutter. When there were moments of which they didn't hear the scribe or the priest read the law to them out in the public, then they were given the opportunity to, as it states here in verse 2, on his law does he meditate day and night, mutter it. And it's like you mutter to yourself certain things. Like you would say, I delight in the law of Jehovah. You kind of mutter that to yourself quietly. You just mutter that to yourself, I delight in the law of the Lord. I delight in the law of Jehovah. I delight in the law of the Lord. And it's a continuing thing of which you think about, and you even state it, mutter it, of which you don't just delight it initially, you just say these things. As a result, that prevents you from, like verse 1, not walking with, standing with, or sitting with the scoffers or the sinners or the wicked. And you continue to delight in this because of all the many bits of information that it gives you. Like, for example, in the book of Joshua chapter 1, verse 8 and 9, there was a message given to Joshua about how he was going to be able to lead the people across the Jordan River into the new land. In verse 8 of Joshua 1, it says, this book of law shall not depart out of your mouth, but thou shalt meditate thereon day and night, that thou mayest observe to do according to all that is written therein, for then thou shalt make your way prosperous, and thou shalt have good success. See, you've got blessings associated with not only in the delight of the law, but of the muttering or the meditating of the law. And he says in verse 9, have not I commanded thee, be strong of good courage, do not be afraid, neither be dismayed, for Jehovah is thy God is with thee whithersoever thou goest. Now that would be true that God would be with you wherever you would go. And in his case, that would be true. But there's also something to be said for knowing that this law of which he should meditate on day and night is God with him. It's God's law which is muttering, and that's God's information of counsel that directs his life in the decisions that he makes every day. That's how, when he gets so involved in the delight of the law, he meditates on it day and night, and as a result, he's like what it says in verse 3. But would you rather hear the voice of God, or would you rather hear the counsel of the wicked? John chapter 10, verse 3 through verse 5. This is where the contrast between Jesus and the false teachers came into existence. When he used the illustration of the shepherd and the sheep, he says in verse 2, to him that is the porter, when he opens and the sheep hears his voice, he calls his own sheep by name and he leads them out. When he has put forth all his own, he goes before them and the sheep follows him, for they know his voice. A stranger they won't follow, but will flee from him, for they know not the voice of the stranger. You think about the counsel of the wicked. In chapter 1 of Psalm, when you hear that, which direction do you go? Do you walk along the way, and all of a sudden you stand and you hear what they say, and then you sit and listen? Boy, that's interesting. I don't think I've ever heard this before. That's pretty intriguing to me. And it begins to be something that you think, wow, that's an interesting idea. And you might want to digest a little bit more, and then you want to believe it, and you begin to practice it. But the counsel of the wicked are those which he says in verse 1 of Psalm 1, you just avoid that. Just get away from it. And find yourself in verse 2, delighting in the law of Jehovah and meditating on that law day and night. You mutter it to yourself, and you find yourself in a point, but in the position where you just constantly feed on everything God says. Jeremiah says this is so true. He illustrates both instances in Psalm 1. In Jeremiah chapter 17, I want you to pick up on this. Let's go back, instead of going to verse 7, let's go back to verse 5 and look at what it is he states here. And I want you to pick up on verse 5 and 6 as what's stated in Psalm chapter 1, verse 1. Cursed is the man that trusts in man and makes flesh his arm, whose heart departs from Jehovah. That's what the counsel of the wicked would do. What's the result? He shall be like the heath of the desert and shall not see when good comes, but shall inhabit the parched places in the wilderness. A salty land that's uninhabited, barren, no fruit. But the opposite in verse 7, blessed is the man that trusts in Jehovah and whose trust Jehovah is. That's Psalm 1, verse 3, or 2 and 3. The result is, he shall be a tree planted by the waters that spreads out its roots by the river and shall not fear when heat comes. But its leaves shall be green, and he shall not be careful in the year of the drought, neither shall cease from yielding fruit. Don't have to worry about the drought. This tree is planted by the river. There's going to be fruit all the time. There's going to be a blessing with a quality of a life bringing about success. That's the book of 1 Timothy chapter 4, verse 8. That's what Joshua was told in Joshua chapter 1. 1 Timothy chapter 4, verse 8, godliness is profitable unto all things, having promised the life that now is and of that which is to come. The quality of the life of the individual from the choice that he or she makes in delighting in the law is like a tree planted by the streams of water. And I must tell you, in the days of the Old Testament, in the barren lands, to find this was a blessing. To find a tree planted by the streams of water was a unique thing. And to say that it would bring forth its fruit in its season and whose leaf does not wither, that's an ongoing year-round process, of which he says, and whatsoever he does shall prosper. That's exactly what God told Joshua. You listen to this law, you delight in this law, your day will prosper. Whereas on the other side, the opposite, the other thing that you see is in verse 4, the wicked. Very disappointing. They may think their life is going to prosper. Matter of fact, it's very much so that their life is temporarily very productive. It seems like everything is going their way. Everything is just so pleasurable. He says they're like the chaff which the wind drives away. It's really destructive. The chaff, which is what's left over after you get the seed out of the plant, just good for nothing. Chaff is really basically saying it's nothing. It's just to be blown away by the wind. It doesn't last. It doesn't have stability. It has no solid foundation. It's very similar to what we would read in the end of the Sermon on the Mount, Matthew chapter 7. Where he talked about the man that built his house upon the sand and the man that built his house upon the rock. The man that built his house upon the sand, unstable foundation. Whenever the winds get really severe and the water rises and the storms are intense, said that house is going to fall down. The one that's got a real steady, solid foundation, no matter how high the water gets, how severe the storm, or how intense the wind, it's going to be stable. That's what you've got in verse 3 of Psalm chapter 1. Such a wonderful picture here. A wonderful opportunity. A wonderful quality of life that's found in the book of Psalm chapter 1. But then we find ourselves getting to this right here. The results. Usually that's what people are looking for. They're looking for results. They're looking for some kind of indication that the way in which they're going is either going to bring about prosperous results, or it's going to be devastating. And as a result, they know they're going to choose the good side versus the wrong side. They're going to look at the productive side, not the path that leads to destruction. Therefore, the wicked shall not stand in the judgment. Now, in life, I've got to tell you, when it comes down to the wicked standing, they've stood with the best of them. They've stood toe-to-toe, face-to-face with everybody and anybody. Their pride, their self-sufficiency, their education, their career, their position, their popularity. Everybody likes them. Everybody listens to them. Therefore, see, they're the people who seemingly shall stand in life. But the wicked shall not stand in the judgment. It's interesting to me that you contrast that, or I should say maybe it's parallel to the thing that he states in verse 1, where he says, the counsel of the wicked don't stand in that counsel. And you get the end result in verse 5, the wicked shall not stand in the judgment. Now they may think they're going to be stable, but doesn't get him anywhere. He says, nor the sinners in the congregation of the righteous. That kind of tells you something very clear. It's very similar to Matthew chapter 7, verse 13, verse 14 again. That the wicked are going to be separated from the people that are the righteous. They're not going to be numbered among the congregation of the righteous. There's going to be a distinction between the two. And that was brought out in what Jesus talked about in the theme of, or I should say the scenario with Matthew chapter 25. With a picture of the judgment, the left and the right, the righteous and the wicked. And he says, you're not going to see both of these two just kind of going in the same place and going in the same interest. they're going to go two different directions. The results are definitely something that the wicked will not ever escape. Matthew chapter 23:33. And that's what Jesus was talking about with these Pharisees and scribes who are hypocrites. There's an interesting word in verse 6. For Jehovah knows the way of the righteous, but the way of the wicked shall perish. He knows the way of the righteous. It's almost like there's this very intimate relationship between God and the people that want to do what's right. And you know what brings them together? You know how they become to be very intimate with each other to where God knows them? It's back up in verse 2. Their delight is in the law of Jehovah. It's through that law of which he teaches, God knows those people that follow that way. And he knows that way that is different from the way of the wicked. And as a result, when you get to Matthew chapter 7, verse 21, it's not all those people that say, well, Lord, Lord, and it gets them into heaven. It's those people that do what this way says. Those that do what the will of the Lord is. That's the result of what you see here in Psalm chapter 1. That you've got the wicked in verse 5 that is separated from the righteous whom the Lord knows and whom the Lord is going to bless in this text. And it just seems to be so providential and so much a part of God's wisdom to put this chapter, the very first one. And then from this point on, you begin to see so many different things that show what this chapter is about. It shows the path of the wicked and what happens when people listen to the counsel of the wicked. And it also shows the people that listen to and delight in the law of Jehovah and the blessings that come from that, the fruit that's produced from that, because they're planted by the stream that constantly feeds them what it is that God wants them to do, that he knows their way, that verse 6 talks about. And also find that when you go to 1 Corinthians chapter 1, that this psalm is in so many ways similar to the things that pertain to the cross. I want you to notice this with me. In 1 Corinthians chapter 1 and verse 18, because we look at this book of Psalm and we say, oh man, this is so much wisdom, so much a wonderful thing. Matter of fact, when you look at the book of Psalm chapter 40 verse 8, I delight to do your will, O my God, your law is within my heart. Well, how is that going to find itself from what 1 Corinthians chapter 1 talks about? First of all, when you notice in verse 21, seeing that in the wisdom of God, the world through its wisdom knew not God, it was God's good pleasure through the foolishness of the preaching to save them that believe. Now, the people that are Psalm 1 verse 1, they would reject the preaching of the gospel. Psalms would be a book of wisdom that everybody would say, there's power in this, there's strength in this, there's comfort in this, there's deliverance in this. 1 Corinthians chapter 1 says in verse 21, the cross is the wisdom of God that the world's wisdom does not pay attention to. Matter of fact, in verse 25, 26, and 27, they think their way is of a greater advantage. But yet, in verse 25, it says the weakness of God is stronger than men. Those who see the wisdom of God is to be delighted and is to be obeyed, what will it do for them? He says in verse 23, seeing that the Jews ask for signs, but we preach Christ crucified, and a Jew's a stumbling block, and a Gentile's foolishness, but unto them that are called, both Jews and Gentiles, Christ the power of God and the wisdom of God. This cross, according to verse 21, saves those that believe in this wisdom. They receive help from it. They receive comfort from it. And they receive salvation from it. That's why Romans 1 verse 16 says the gospel is the power of God to save. Psalm chapter 1 leads you into a book that is so full of wonderful blessings from God only if your delight in verse 2 is in that law. That should be our meditation. As Jerry prayed about earlier, this should be something that we constantly will observe, pay attention to, read, and follow. As a child of God, if you're one of those individuals who thinks and believes that success in life is based upon the counsel of the wicked, please know that you're going to be very, very disappointed, because that way leads to destruction. Whereas the path of the delight of those that delight in the law of the Lord leads to fruitfulness, success, prosperity, and ultimately the blessings of God in heaven. If you should need to repent, please know that we'll be glad to help you with that, to help you change the life and attitudes of which you have, to find yourself delighting in all the ways of Jehovah and then seeing the blessings of which He has in mind for you, knowing that when you follow this law and delight in it, God will know that you are the righteous. And He will have an intimate relationship with you because you see His law is the law of which you should follow. And He will bless you as He sees best. Respond to Him. Do what's right. While together we sing this song.